This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Jay Hanselman, filling in for Mark Haney. Dr. George Utz is a professor of biology at the University of Cincinnati, and Alex Swegger is a graduate student. Together, they have discovered a new species of wolf spider with audible mating songs that sound like a cat purring. Last summer, they presented their findings to the Acoustical Society of America. They sat down with Cincinnati Zoo Director Thane Maynard to talk about wolf spiders and their mating songs.
Well, I'll tell you what, this is great. I'm here with my old friend George Utz. We've known each other for years, professor of biology at the University of Cincinnati and a spider behaviorist, but also with the grad student of George's, Alex Swegger. Welcome.
Hey, nice to be here.
And of course, what brings us here today is, Alex, you've been doing really interesting work on wolf spiders and their behavior. But to start folks off, I was saying most people know they're spiders, but they might even know there are wolf spiders. So give a little background, both of you or either.
Well, wolf spiders are... They don't build webs. They're usually ground-dwelling hunting spiders. They run down their prey.
Okay.
Hence the name,
like a wolf
spider.
Yeah,
and they have good vision. They have eight eyes, and they're very sensitive to vibration. They hear through their legs, so they're really. We've studied them in my lab for quite some time. They're a very good model animal for understanding behavior and the senses.
Now, I know you've gotten a lot of press, and you have, Alex, because I think you're doing this as part of your thesis, that they create vibrations that end up even creating sounds that I guess people can hear if they listen carefully enough.
Yeah, and that's the interesting thing about the species that I'm looking at primarily is vibrations are really common in wolf spiders as a whole, at least in North America as far as communication. But this species is creating such a strong vibration that when you put it on something like a leaf that sort of vibrates, it'll... It actually creates an airborne sound that you can hear. And it's not as loud as like a cricket or something like that, but it's much louder than what we would expect for a species that doesn't normally use airborne sound as far as we know.
So how does a spider create sound? Is it just wiggling the leaf, or what's it doing?
Well, I mean, there's a stridulatory organ, which is sort of like a, if you think of like a washboard,
like a
ridge structure and then a pick that goes across it, which is really common in insects and spiders across the board. But it will basically, it has two of those on a joint, that it will sort of oscillate, and then that travels down through those appendages and into the leaf, and that creates sort of a little purring sound almost.
And that's been known about wolf spiders for a good long time, past several decades. It's very low amplitude, right at the threshold of human hearing for most species, but in this case of Gladicosa gallosa, the one that Alex worked with, they're much louder than that.
So give us a sense of how big is this spider if folks were going to look for it.
I mean, this spider is – I mean, it's a little larger than some of the really tiny species that are out there, but it's not huge. I mean, it's probably maybe an inch and a half, you know, depending. You can get up to maybe 2 inches if it's a bigger, you know, specimen, but they're not particularly – large. There are even species of wolf spider out there that are several inches long, and we've measured some of them, and with the same organs that they use for producing vibration, don't create nearly the sound that these guys do. So that's one of the things that we think is interesting, is that it's not just bigger spiders or louder spiders, but this species in particular is louder.
So just guessing, I'm imagining that it has to do with finding a mate, but tell me, what have you learned?
It is. As far as we know, it's definitely courtship communication. I mean, it matches, at least in structure, the same types of courtship signals in other species. But I've also had a student who's actually just been pairing males and females and sort of look and analyzing each component of the structure of the signal in relation to whether or not a male is successful in finding a mate. And it's heavily related to that. So yeah, it's definitely a courtship signal.
So they're on these dried leaves. One thing I'm sure any listener wonders, can you hear it without amplification?
Yeah. I mean, at least anecdotally, we've gone out in the field and collected them, and you can hear them at about a meter.
No kidding.
Standing in the field on a quiet night.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not strong enough that it's going to, you know, really, really catch your attention, but they court relatively early in the spring. So if they're out there in mid-March, you know, it's not a lot going on in terms of the acoustic environment. So that may mean that their environment may be a little bit more accommodating of a very quiet sound.
When Alex started this work, we started looking into the literature, and this species has been called the purring wolf spider.
There you go.
For a long time. The first records are back in the 1890s, but there are several mentions in the early anecdotal literature that's very descriptive, was that not only could it be heard at several meters distance, but it appeared to be responded to by other spiders, which is unusual because we know that spiders don't have the typical kind of organs that other animals that perceive airborne sound have.
Meaning they don't have ears.
They don't have any ears. No. They feel vibrations through their legs.
Okay.
They have special organs on their legs and vibrations on leaves or on plants or something like that might travel up their legs and get registered that way, which is what makes Alex's work pretty interesting.
Okay, so I can understand, I think, so far that for the sake of discussion, there's a male, he's on the dried leaves, and he's making noise, and the noise is louder because the leaf is vibrating too, and it travels through his legs. But if a potential mate is a meter away, they're not on the same leaf, so their leaf vibrates too, or how does it
And that's really what we think might be, if you're thinking of how this could be useful and from an evolutionary perspective, that's what we think is might be going on. We've played just the airborne sound to males and females at about 20 centimeters at the most. So we haven't gone out as far as a meter, but we still see changes in movement patterns and association. And sometimes that can be enough for something to be advantageous. And so if females are more likely to be moving around looking for a mate just because something's vibrating nearby, then that can make it useful. But yeah, in terms of the vibration, vibrations travel very, very efficiently, but that cuts off pretty quickly when you lose the substrate. So if you're in a bunch of leaf litter, you know, the leaf you're on, it may be touching other leaves and the vibration may move out a little bit, but it's going to drop off pretty significantly every time there's a break in the substrate you're standing on. So we think making an airborne sound that might vibrate another leaf nearby might be an efficient means, or maybe not really efficient, but another means of extending the range of that signal.
It's the simplest explanation would be the male spider is communicating to the female using a leaf as a speaker, and the female spider is using the leaf as a microphone to receive the same airborne sound.
Yeah.
So bypasses all that distance it has to travel across the ground.
And there's actually been other evidence in the lab from past years and other students that have worked that certain species of spider will respond to even things like bird calls and exhibit anti-predator behavior if they're on something like a leaf. So there's a lot of data suggesting that it is the same organs for detecting vibration, but they're so sensitive that they can pick up airborne sound as long as, you know, the leaf they're
on vibrates. That's an advantage because the spider was only a couple of centimeters long. A lot of birds would probably try to eat them or other predators. So if you could have an early warning system, I guess. But on the other hand, birds are calling for other birds, right? They're trying to mate or whatever, but I guess he'd know he's in the neighborhood.
But it's an assessment of danger in the neighborhood.
Sure. This is fascinating. Now, okay, how did you come upon in fact, anybody studying, you know, an in-depth field, at some point you've got to say, okay, here's going to be my study subject, my question I'm going to ask. So did you stumble upon purring wolf spiders, or how did this happen?
A little bit. Yeah. I mean, Dr. Oetz has worked with another species, Schizocosa ocreata, for almost 40 years now. So, you know, we had started collecting that species and come across this species at relatively decent density. So we collected it, keyed it out, and found it was this species. And then I went back through the literature. And as Dr. Ed said, the earliest writings are in the, you know, late 1800s, early 1900s, but that's pretty much where it ends. So it was all very anecdotal. There was nothing really manipulative or experimental done with the species to find out about its biology. So I pretty quickly decided that I wanted to investigate. You sort of build a framework for whether or not this had value in answering questions about acoustic communication, and at the very least put to rest whether or not it's making and using airborne sound.
And we'd been working for some time in my lab on the concept of eavesdropping, the fact that other wolf spiders listen in on the courtship of other males as a way of finding out where the females are in the neighborhood. And if they could do that at greater distances, that would really be quite a phenomenon. And I encouraged Alex to start working.
Yeah. This is great. And it has to be rewarding and surprising to get so much sort of interest in this. I've heard about it from the BBC, and it's been on a number of websites I've seen. So, George, you would know because different projects you've worked on have caught people's fancy.
True.
But I'll tell you what, a lot of people are talking about this purring wolf spider.
Yeah, I've been out of town, and Alex has been fielding all of the press calls. So it's a good experience for him.
Oh yeah,
yeah. It's been kind of overwhelming, but it's good to know that, you know, at least there's some public interest in what I'm doing.
Are there a lot of different types of wolf spiders? And tell us a little bit more.
There's several thousand species of wolf spiders.
Yeah, when you get to spider diversity, there's a lot of them.
Well, lots of different species. But wolf spiders are a little more common in the north. They're very common in the forests of the Midwest, mm-hmm. where we are. You go up further north, say, onto the tundra, they are clearly the dominant spider in that area. Mm-hmm. So they're a little more adapted to cold. They're found in the tropics as well, and they're very different there. But our guys are... You know, they're all kind of built along the same body plan, the same basic mm-hmm. design. They're kind of brown. They're visual in behavior, less so. They don't see colors, for example.
You know, you say that, but you and I have been together when we've looked very closely under, say, a dissecting microscope, if not at this spider, some like it. And you said they have good eyesight. When you look super closely at spiders, a lot of times they have great colors and stripes. They're crazy looking.
Well, a lot of those are the jumping spiders.
Okay, yeah, that's right.
They have
that's
color
right.
vision. Yeah. And that makes that was a big science story last week. But jumping spiders have very, very acute vision. But wolf spiders are probably second or third in the quality of visual capability. Yeah. And we've been learning a lot more about them.
Yeah, no kidding. This is fascinating. Well, thanks for coming in.
Well,
certainly good to see
us.
Both, and it's neat to tell that story. So take care.
All right.
Thanks.
My guests have been George Utz and Alex Swegger from the University of Cincinnati. For Cincinnati Edition, I'm Thane Maynard.